Military officers are very well trained in the chain of command. They understand that they're not the president. Donald Trump is the president.
The world is really a dark place when the United States of America is not involved.
I do think there is a degree of admiration for a strong man. I'm sorry.
Welcome to the Global Politico. I'm Susan Glasser, and each week I'll be taking you backstage in a world disrupted. Join us every Monday morning for new episodes. Rate and subscribe to us on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast platform is. And do email me anytime at sglasser@politico.com. And now, this week's show.
Hi, this is Susan Glasser, and welcome back to the Global Politico. This week, we have a very special guest, the Chinese artist Ai Weiwei. I had a chance to sit down with Weiwei, a legendary artist who's long embraced political themes in his work, when he was here in Washington recently. He's gone full-out activist these days in a new feature-length documentary film about the global refugee crisis called Human Flow, released in theaters across the U.S. Friday, and also in a new New York City-wide public art exhibit of 300 works in dozens of locations called Good Walls Make Good Neighbors. In some ways, I found Ai Weiwei to be making a strong case for himself as America's leading dissident of the Trump era. Never mind that he's Chinese or that he lives in Berlin in de facto exile these days. Both of these new works by Weiwei are explicit rebuttals of the nationalistic America First fueled policies espoused by Trump, from his proposed Mexican border wall to his curbs on immigration. In our conversation, Weiwei referred to Trump's whim as the moment I think history stopped. I found it to be a powerful and fascinating discussion of what the world looks like to a dissident artist who's thinking about America's troubled times as well as what's happening in the rest of the planet. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did.
We are really honored to have someone who brings a different perspective to global politics in this conversation today. And, you know, that was the reason for my interest. I know you're here in Washington to show the film to members of Congress and other people who are interested. And I've read something, it was very interesting. You said you wanted this to be a movie that wasn't viewed by refugees. You wanted this, give them a cup of soup, you said, let's give it to the members of Congress. What do you want politicians and members of the U.S. Congress to take away from this powerful but unusual movie about human migration?
To deal with the situation like human crisis, 65 million people being displaced, lost their home, and with such human tragedy, has to make every level of society to be conscious and to be alert about the situation. So the political politicians and the people who make decisions are very often is the one we think can make some difference. But of course, they will not make difference if the citizens or the individuals are not push it or not to speak out. To put this in a very a strong voice about this is not acceptable.
You say this is not acceptable, but it's interesting that you're coming here just 9 months into President Trump's administration. In many ways, the view of this crisis in your film Human Flow is almost radically opposed to the policies that he is trying to implement here. He wants to build a wall, not to knock it down. This new nationalism here in the United States, how do you see that?
It's ironic. Before he became president, I was in the U.S.-Mexico border.
The day before?
Yeah, I sense he's going to become president, even all my friends. 100% doesn't believe it.
Wow.
So I made a bet. I said, let's bet on some money so later you'll remember it. So I went.
What was the bet? Tragically,
it's just $50 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, you know, I cannot prove it. So on the airplane, I wake up, you know, during the middle of flight, ask the attendant, you know, what's the result? She told me Trump. That moment, I think the history stopped somehow. So you can easily to see as a result now today you hear the, you know, the traveling ban, you know, all those things, and they're still talking about build this wall. Then you can see how individual elected by democratic society and a very strong background as liberty, you know, the nation defends all those very essential rights, human dignity, liberty, freedom of speech, can come out a product, a true product, which really hurting the very fundamental beliefs. I take generations of people to fight for this, to make that libid, you know, to add up all those effort to defending those values, but can be ruined with one hand, and which reflects a very, very strong backwards of our human development. And that would send even worse signals to the world.
Well, yeah. Right. Do you think in China, for example, they take comfort from this?
I think China would be laughing about the situation. You know, China, Russian, they all laugh about it. They see how dramatic U.S. has to be put this kind of shame on its own, you know, cannot handle the situation or... show such a difficulty with this liberal ideas. Men are, or women, created equal. And to defend those very essential ideas.
So do you think there's anything now that can be done? I mean, you talked about this being ruined.
Yes.
But do you feel that a lot of people here in Washington say, well, okay, but we have institutions in our democracy and we have the rule of law and not of men. You know, what do you think?
I think that's exactly why I make this film, is to show any individual can contribute its own belief and to make a clear definition about what an individual can do. And, you know, our society or even our government are made by the people. The people would have the final voice, but it requires each individual to act. If we don't act, then the result is very clear. So for too long, we take liberty as granted. You know, we think we are in the safe hand, you know, the democracy and the liberty, which is not true. And it can be even getting much worse than today. So it's really an alarm to show how easily in any society, if we don't really, for each generation, if we don't really defend liberty or a democracy, the situation would getting really bad.
So, you know, we had this huge debate over taking in refugees from Syria. And even under President Obama, remember, there was only going to be 10,000. Donald Trump was able to use that successfully in the campaign. Do you think it is a shame on the United States not to have accepted more people? In your film, you know, you're filming in Jordan, you're filming in Lebanon, where these small countries have taken in literally millions of refugees. And you know, we're fighting over 10,000.
I think it's a shame, but it really, as a symptom, you can see how far we are shifting from a very liberal very brave nation. The nation have courage and imagination, become a timid and covert and a selfish place. And this is, it's not you helping the refugees. The refugee live or die or have its own fate. But about Americans, Americans believe how you have this self-identity, how mm-hmm. you think about yourself, how you think your own position in today's world. And I think that really matters very much to this land. It's not about to helping another person. You can turn your face away, but you cannot really turn your face away from yourself. You look at a mirror, then you look at your children. You think what kind of future you're providing and how are you going to teach them? I mean, this is really tragic in testing or challenge our humanity within everybody. We have to understand we all part of it.
Is that why you made the film, you know, in a way about, you know, your own journey of trying to figure this out as opposed to help any specific refugees? You told this amazing story that you were actually in Greece with your son and your girlfriend, and you saw the refugees come up on the beach.
Yeah, I got myself involved. It's only with very simple intuitions, like I like to know more about it. You know, I cannot let such a tragic thing happens with to say I don't know about it, which is not my style. So,
and that's because you're living in Berlin.
Yeah, I cannot, you know, I already have my passport for years, for generations. My father and being mistreated, you know, millions of people being sent into labor camps, the dead in such a van, and, you know, nobody can speak out. Then today, I'm living in this, you know, internet age, and I'm an artist, still have some voice there, and have some influence. If I keep silent or pretend this not happened, it's just not me. I cannot do it. But it's very difficult journey because I know so little, you know, with this kind of education background, I know very little about what happened in the world. So I have to really jump in. I have to jump into the boat. Literally, I found a boat abandoned in the middle of the ocean. I said, let me be in the boat for a while because the boat is already half sinking. You know, people already not there. So I found a Bible there. I found a milk bottle there, you know, some shoes and clothes. But it's nobody there. So I told the boat, I said, you just leave me alone so I can stay here for a while. So in there, by in the middle of the ocean, I start to feel how it's like. Just, you know, the life is very fragile in the nature. If you without help, without thinking, oh, there's another human being, maybe care, then, you know, there's no hope, you know, for life. So then that made me understand, you know, how do we face in our children, you know, to set up some kind of example to say, I made the effort. You know, the world can never be a perfect one, but the effort is very important. It's about our life to make some kind of effort and maybe helping the other people, maybe by recognize ourselves, maybe just to say, I didn't fail the life itself because life means to have this kind of struggle. Life is not about just enjoy the materials and the richness of the plentiness of the material life, but rather to be sensitive to other people's existence. And we are human being, you know, this is the most beautiful name we can find. It's about to share and to have a compassion for others.
So you embarked on this huge project that took you to 23 different countries.
Yeah, but it seems a huge project, but I think the first refugee I interviewed is a man from Afghanistan, now facing possibilities Germans are going to send them back because they have some kind of policy, which is ridiculous. You know, they take them the most difficult past, you know, from this kind of war Zung come to Germany, now they have been forced to send back. Then you see all those refugees we interviewed for 2 years now, they're still living in the camp. You can see the future is very dark. You know, there's no way they can be integrated.
And so many children. I was really blown away by that, especially the ones coming to Europe. They're just extraordinarily high percentage of little children getting off those boats.
Those children are smart, healthy, but you can see they're wasted because there's no way you really give them a right education or even right protection. And, you know, for that kind of, you know, you feel that way, then you feel the film cannot help them that much.
Mm-hmm. In all of the countries that you went to, like, for example, you not only met Afghan refugees in Germany, but you actually rode in a convoy of returning Afghan refugees from Pakistan going back. I saw you went through the Khyber Pass and into Afghanistan with them. I mean, this is a very immersive experience. What surprised you? What countries were you most unprepared for? What did you learn in this?
For a film like this, you meet all kind of conditions. After a while, you feel they all about the same. It's all come from our, you know, neglectance, and it's all casualties. For some reason, they will never understand. But what shocks me the most is the people has so privileged in Europe or in elsewhere and not to taking the refugee condition seriously, to see millions people lost their home and continuously developing the situation. And it's going to getting worse. African situation and what happens in Myanmar today is unacceptable. But when we start to accept those unacceptables, that tells our human condition how bad that can be. And the refugees are not people we need to really save them, but rather we have to save our own soul and our own mind and our own society. So this is so much connected. And this kind of consciousness and alert, it should be easily understood in today.
Well, that's right. There are many points in the film and in your own view of it that do seem addressed at Europe or the United States. You know, the antiseptic way in which the Italian I guess their border police are greeting the refugees and they're wearing masks, or in Gaza, a lot of people noted this, you know, the animals seem to be treated with more humanity in some ways. There's this incredible parable of the tiger who somehow ran through the tunnels, the Hamas tunnels from Egypt, and is a very unhappy tiger as a result of living in this horrible condition. And basically, they get the governments of Israel, which is basically not on speaking terms with Hamas, and South Africa and all these other governments to rescue this one tiger. And that seemed like a very powerful metaphor that you included for a reason in the film.
Yes, we see animals can be casualties of human ignorance and also can be somehow risked by some very ironic situation. But that reflects our human condition today. We are our act always being decided by our own limitations or our own visions about ourselves or other people. And those kind of understanding sometimes can design a nation's fate or one type of people's fate for years or 100 years could be. So how to become a really a modern society with today we are so so as a human being, we feel so powerful. You know, we have a high technology and a superb way of controlling our life. And at the same time, we in many ways, we are so primitive. We're not even just a step away from a most brutal and a primitive crudity, you know, to be very crude mm-hmm. On those issues, which is always challenges, and we always have to look at those situation and like a mirror to draw some understanding and to really act. I think the film encourages each people to have their own voice, which is the only way in this democratic society to structure a better political condition.
So you appear throughout this journey of, you know, these 23 different countries. You're in the film playing a different role. You're engaging with these refugees. You know, there's one young woman who's showing you her cat pictures on her iPhone. You know, you have a joking exchange with somebody about trading passports and trading lives. Why are you in the film? Like, what is your role?
I think my role is very much like a clown in the traditional theater. You know, in the emperor's court, you have people, but you also have a clown there to tell a very private view about what's going on. And you know, you're trying to introduce those people. It's just like us in those most difficult times, we still want to share their cast to another foreign, you know, a artist or someone make a film, and all those little details, and you know, they cut your hair, you cut their hair, you know, it's hair cutting, it becomes some kind of symbolic way to share some time or some touch.
Yeah, you're talking about there's a scene film where they shave off your hair.
Yeah, and exchange most valuable identity for them is the paper of a so-called passport. And of course, the passport, nobody really recognizes their passport. And yeah, you know, they talk about... then we think how we recognize each other is from those details. And we really care about the same thing. We are really scared of the same thing. You know, we don't want to be ignored or exist at the same time as not exist.
So the idea was that, in effect, you're experiencing this as a proxy for the viewer experiencing.
I think I need to build up these kind of connections because it's not a historical channel or something. It's really about one person's approach. And you have a large views on the draw and also this kind of little humor style bring back to the reality.
Was there anywhere that you couldn't go in making the film, that you tried to go?
There are many locations I couldn't go, such as Syria, which during the Liverpool, you know, the city being bombed, and I really want to go, but we couldn't make it. You know, all the channels are really blocked. And also many politicians we want to interview, we never really get... answer back. So yeah, a film like this we designed a nice frame, and you know, we studied all the historical writings or literature or poetry about human flow, and it started from the beginning of the human history, and but there's always you know, regrets on the something you cannot make it.
So you've always been identified as an artist who is not afraid of politics and, in fact, is almost connected to politics. What do you think is the biggest political mistake that you think about these days as a result of it? Is it the threat to the internal threats to our Western democracies, or is it external?
I think if we talk about biggest threat is in the past decades, the West think about we have this democracy which guarantees our political and individuals' rights and is healthy society. As a result of a long time human development, we come to this stage. But same time, the world are developed very unevenly. We never really see the global situation as a total situation. We are today's political leaders are still lacking of the vision. They very often just try to cope with their own election, their own popularity, solving the problem or selling the ideas to meet their own voters. By doing that, it creates a great imbalance in terms of making deals or trade or all those things. Even today, the borders we are seeing, the physical borders is very different from the political borders, because all those powers are so connected and you cannot even see who's interested in what move. It's very, very complicated. And that is very dangerous because the power become much more powerful. China become much more powerful than we think there is, because they are really capitalized. They can buy anything, can own anything.
Sorry, they became more powerful because of
because the
technology?
Border is not there mm-hmm. anymore. Mm-hmm. The U.S. interest very much could be China's interest. And so the actual borders only stops the poorest people flow. But the actual border in the political landscape is completely different. China bought Germans back, the big, big part, and those things has been accepted, also the all those business deals, and which every power become so profit oriented, and that can create a tremendous uncertainty in today's world.
You've always been such a leader in speaking out for freedom of expression and freedom of speech, including in China, where it is not a guarantee. Are you worried about the role of technology now in possibly undermining it? Here in America, fake news is something that concerns all of us journalists as we worry about that. What's your view?
I think it's have a strong reason to worry about not just technology, but how our structure, the democratic structure, or the other structure can guarantee certain leader or individual can carry out certain things, cannot be stopped because our system are designed that way to provide that kind of possibility. So with such a vast scientific development or technology or globalization, this kind of possibility of development, our political structure still needed to be re-examined and to be adjusted to a more safe position. So we can already see the problem. People start to sense the problem. Certain things very unexpected can happen and still controls our nation or and we feel powerless, doesn't know what to do with it. So I think that is could be a good sign, because that alarms people to really all intellectuals to really come out some idea or vision how this democracy and can really serve the people rather than to become misused.
So you're living in Berlin now. What would happen to you if you tried to go back to China?
I was promised I have a freedom, so I immediately went back after I started teaching in Berlin, and nobody touches me. But two of my lawyers are being put in jail. They're still serving sentence. And many of my friends are being held without trial. No lawyers can see them. So it's a society which is so so much uncertainty there. You cannot trust it because there's no independent of a judicial system. You know, the party can manipulate it as they want. So it's dangerous, it's very strong for everybody if you have a voice.
So are you a man without a country now, like some of the people in the film?
Clearly, I am a man without country, and I don't know until end of my life I would find a place I can call it my country.
A lot of people here in Washington wonder whether the future holds a conflict between China and the United States as the two major powers. What do you think?
I think U.S. see China as a big opportunity as a business partner or some kind of strategic partner maybe. But as in any game, those kind of power when it's getting too big, then it will have competition. And who is going to win the competition if U.S. cannot hold a strong ideology? And even U.S. would have lost the ground to win.
Do you think the Chinese people would fight the American people if they had to?
I don't think it's fight physically, but, you know, globally, the politics, you always, you'll make your friends and you will make your own, you know, associates, and it becomes some kind of political power, and it will exist. And today we are not out of danger of a nuclear war, you know, all those weapons are still there, and who knows when this will be triggered, and then that will be put end of humanity.
You didn't go to the border between North Korea and South Korea for this film.
No, I didn't. I visited there a long time ago once, you know, very close. And but if Korean War with U.S. happened, China will become a nation, receive a lot of refugees. Ironically, you know, China will be the only place would have millions of refugees flood into it, which is very possible.
Well, that's we're all watching the situation right now unfold in this amazing series of tweets and exchanges of insults. It's
So everything's real. It looks everything's not real, but everything's real.
That's a good way of putting it. Well, one of the things that's real, as you described, your shock at finding out that Donald Trump was the president of the United States. Here you are in Washington, just a mile or so away from the White House. If you could meet President Trump, what would you tell him?
I think he should cool down a little bit, you know, to pay more attention to the history, you know, to really understand what U.S. value is about. I think as president, those things you always have to ask.
Ai Weiwei, his new film, which is coming out now in theaters and on Amazon, right, is called Human Flow. It's something very unusual, very powerful, and we're incredibly grateful to have him as our guest this week on the Global Politico. It's really an honor to have this conversation with you, and we are so grateful that you took time out of your short visit here to Washington again. Ai Weiwei, thank you very much.
Thank you so much to have me.